Southern California. This is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
We start our second hour. Welcome back. A tremendous Monday to you. I am live in Southern California. I'm broadcasting from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studio. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. So what's unique about today is the cameras are on. You can't see what we're doing, but we are rehearsing. We are doing our dry run-throughs. So the cameras are on in the studio. We've got lots of people bouncing around. So this thing is official. It's going to happen. Not that I ever thought that it wasn't, but they are on. And it feels great. January 2nd is the big day. This show is going to become a television show. Now, the way my career has always been set up, back in the day, I would do my radio program, then do a daily TV show after the radio program. And the daily TV show was different than the radio program. And it was after the radio program. That's not what this is. This is a live simulcast. So the jungle comes to television finally after all this time. And it's going to happen on January 2nd. It's going to be on CBS Sports Network. You need to make sure you have CBS Sports Network so you can watch The Jungle live. That's January 2nd. We're down to our last couple of weeks here. Then I'm off for the end of the year like I am every year. And then we come back and this show is on TV. All right, in the meantime, you can find me toll-free, 1-800-636-8686. Hit me up on Twitter, at Jim Rome. One thing about Twitter, when Twitter went to 280 characters, I said at that time, I'm team 140. I'm not making that switch. And if I'm not making the switch, that means the show is not making the switch. And if the show is not making the switch, that means I'm not going to use tweets that exceed 140. And if your tweet exceeds 140, I'm not going to read it or retweet it. To me, there's something to Twitter. I like that format at 140. So I'm getting like some good tweets right now, but they're 200. They're 210. They're 190. I can't read those. Not even if I wanted to. I can't read them. I can't retweet them. Keep that in mind. If you want to hit us up on this show, keep it to 140 or less. If you don't care and you don't need to be on the air or you don't want to be retweeted and you just want to get something off your chest, go ahead. Do whatever you want. But keep in mind, if you want the thing used on the air or turned around and retweeted to 1.4 mil, it's got to be a buck 40 or less. We start hour number two. I've got Jeff Passan coming up at 20 past. I've got Deion Jones, a linebacker for the Atlanta Falcons, coming up later on this hour. Third hour's open. We start hour number two with an email. Dear Rome, if there's ever been a reason to fire a guy, this is it. Hugh Jackson needs to go. First of all, they go all brand new orange helmet on us, and they find enough swagger to ruin their perfect season last year. Now they get Josh Gordon back on the field, and this dude is getting close to blowing it for the entire team, city, and fan base. Josh, you've been sidelined for several seasons. Don't just show up wearing shades and think that you can get away with being a selfish, season-ruining bag. I'm telling you, Vance, if the Browns have any dignity left, they will bench this fool before he goes full-blown disaster and rips them a W. Shane in SLO, I like your attitude. I like where you're going with that. There's something to be said about that. So why don't we talk about the Cleveland Browns for a minute? They replaced their GM last week. So you might think that I was worried heading into yesterday's game against Green Bay. I wasn't. I wasn't worried. I was in a full-blown panic. It's like changing the catcher in the seventh inning of a no-hitter. Why the hell would you do that? There was great chemistry in that organization. The goal was in sight. Everybody was on the same page. And what do? They go and they change everything up by bringing in a new GM, John Dorsey. Hell yes, I was tripping. And so was everybody else living the 0-16 dream right alongside the Browns. Now, I've got to admit, they started quickly. They fell behind 7-0. I felt a hell of a lot better. It was comforting to me. You know, like changing the GM on the Browns was like switching the curtains on the Titanic. You cannot keep a good team down. But then something happened. Something I didn't expect. The Browns scored. DeShone Kizer hit Josh Gordon for a touchdown.
It is 2nd and 7 at the Green Bay 18-yard line. Gordon far side wide to the right. Telfer in motion. He'll go wide right. Crowell the running back. Kizer to throw. Looking. Gordon up in the air. What a catch! Touchdown!
Browns radio. Look, there are a lot of things I could say about that play. And a lot of things I could say about Josh Gordon. Like the fact that he's been out of the game for years. And the guy comes back looking like he hadn't even missed a snap. Like the fact that his return is the thing that scares me the most about the Browns. And that throwing on sunglasses on the sideline was actually pretty awesome. And it was cool that he scored, I guess. But then things got weird. Really weird. Because not only did the Browns tie the game at 7, they did something even more bizarre, even more troubling. They scored again.
Crowell is the running back in the backfield with Kaiser. Gordon off the line to the right with Duvall. Here's a little shovel pass to Duke Johnson to the 5. He's going in. Untouched. Touchdown.
No. Now it's 14-7 Cleveland. The Brown choke is on. They're not focused. They're not paying attention to detail. They're not executing. They're not doing their job because they're trying. And it's working, and it's infuriating because they're winning. And while I was cool on the outside, I'm not going to lie, I was badly rattled. To be really honest about this, I was a wreck. I thought I was having an anxiety attack. I couldn't catch my breath. Then I thought that my heart was going to explode. I thought I suffered a stroke because it was all coming back to me. Blowing this in December would be the most Cleveland thing ever. And I was sure that they were going to do it, especially when this happened.
Kaiser shotgun takes the snap, looks right, drops deeper, throws it to the end zone, caught at the goal line, touchdown, it's Coleman! And the Browns have extended their lead. They lead Green Bay 20-7 with 2:49 to go here in the third quarter.
Attack on the point after, and it's 21-7. Exactly what the hell is going on here? DeShone Kaiser is lighting up the Packers' secondary. And it's not like the Packers don't have something to play for. They had everything to play for. Win this game, get a healthy checkup for Aaron Rodgers, and then they've got their MVP candidate back on the field for a stretch run. But they were blowing it. And more importantly, the Browns were blowing it too. Trust me, for a franchise that has repeatedly stabbed their fan base in the heart over and over again, choking and beating a busted up Packer team with a backup quarterback would officially be rock bottom for that franchise and their fans and that city. This is not how it's supposed to go. This was my worst nightmare playing out right before my eyes. Those chokers went into the fourth quarter with a 2-touchdown lead. Green Bay cuts it to 21-14, but that's just window dressing. Cleveland had already put together TD drives of 88 yards, 70 yards, 84 yards. They were going to find a way to blow this and beat Green Bay. I was sure of it. I was looking for my all-time favorite Browns fan. You know who I'm talking about. The, oh my God, this is not happening, lady.
Oh my God.
We were going to scream it together as another dream season went up in flames.
Oh my God,
this is not happening. Oh my God, this is not happening. That is, until this happened.
Davis is underneath it. He's going to catch it at his 10. He comes near side, then cuts middle, then cuts wide right at the 15, then cuts back again. Now he's to the outside and he's open. 20, 30, 40, 45, 50, 45, 40, 30. He's down to the 25-yard line. The dangerous Trevor Davis with an amazing zigzagging move back at his 10-yard line carries it all the way down to the Browns' 25-yard line, and the Packers are in business.
My man, Trevor Davis. Why he's not on the show right now, I have no idea. Packer Trevor Davis breaking off a 65-yard punt return to the Browns' 25-yard line. 2:37 left in regulation. Now we're talking. That's my team. That's the Browns I love. Man down, baby. When the going gets tough, the tough quit. When life gives you lemons, quit. Brett Hundley then hits Devontae Adams for a 1-yard touchdown to tie the game. And then all seems right in the world. It seemed right, but you never, ever really know with these guys. They've come close before and gone right into the tank. Personally, I think the worst thing that you could ever say about an athlete or a team is that they choked. But these guys have choked in the biggest moments. And I couldn't help but wonder if they would do it again in overtime. But That's when my man, Deshaun Kizer, remembered he was Deshaun Kizer, a guy who had a very good game only to throw a very bad pick.
Here's Kizer back, looking, getting a rush. He's rolling left. He lobs the ball up in the air. That could be picked off, and it's battled for, and the Packers have it. They have it at the Browns' 42-yard line. Josh Jones picked it off. Boy, you want to talk about ill-advised throws. Kizer got drilled by Clay Matthews Jr. He still tried to throw the ball. It popped up in the air, and the Packers had four players around it, and the young defensive back Josh Jones picked it off at the Browns' 42-yard line.
If you want to talk about ill-advised throws, if by ill-advised throws you mean one of the best throws ever, then yes, I would agree. That was an ill-advised throw. That was awesome. That was brilliant. I needed somebody to step up and make a play, and Deshaun Kizer did it. Then the Packers drive to the Browns 25, and then this glorious thing happened.
Third down and six from the 25 of Cleveland. Williams Lamone back. Quick toss. Adams left side. Spins loose. Got the first down.
Oh,
and
more
to the end zone for the touchdown. And the Packers have won in overtime again. Devontae Adams, a walk-off 25-yard touchdown reception.
Packers radio and walk-off is exactly what that was, because my man Devontae Adams went all Flipper Anderson with it. He caught it. He ran into the end zone and down the tunnel. Game over. Thanks for coming. Perfect season still alive. Joe Reedy of the AP tweeted, that is now the 22nd time since 1999 the Browns have lost on the final play. Fourth with Hugh. 26th loss in the final 10 seconds or OT. That is incredible. That is awesome. But awful. And way too close for comfort. Stop messing with me. Listen, let me bottom line this for you before I go to break. I am not here to destroy the Browns. I am here to hype the Browns for finally showing the heart to man the hell down when they had to do it. This is what it takes if you want to go down in history as arguably the worst team. You have to want it, though. And choking away a two-touchdown lead in the fourth quarter shows me that you do want it. It shows me that you have what it takes. I no longer need to lecture these guys about how nobody remembers 1-15, but that 0-16 is forever. Judging from that huge loss yesterday, every last one of them knows it and wants it. Fellas, from me to you, I have never been so proud of you. In fact, I'm not sure I've ever been so proud of anybody, ever, in any walk of life. Now do what you do, namely nothing. 13 down, 3 to go, eyes on the prize. You can do this. You can do this. You will do this. And when you do this, nobody will ever be able to take that from you. And you will be some of the biggest losers ever. Don't choke now. You can do it. I'm with you. We all are. Don't you get to the goal line and not punch this in. Finish what you started. Do your job. And by do your job, I mean don't do your job.
Cleveland! This is for you!
This tweet comes in right before Jeff Passan comes on from the @fakeKWinslow. Over under on how soon @JeffPassan takes a shot at Callan Vegas. I'm setting it at 4 minutes. And I'm taking the under. All right, good enough. You degenerates will bet on anything. I'm trying to talk about the Browns here, all right? But Jeff Passan is coming up. Man, that was nerve-wracking. That was really nerve-wracking. But to me, it's fate. It's destiny. If you can rise up and man down and lose that game the way they lost that game, I know it's a magical year. I know it's going to happen. Before, I'd always be terrified of jinxing it. I now know it's going to happen. When I see that, I know they have it in them. And more importantly, I know they want it as badly as I do. Go get it. It's all right there for you. All right, so we go back to back. When I come back, Jeff Passan joins us. MLB columnist for Yahoo Sports. Giancarlo Stanton going to the Yankees. That's rich, because they're rich. They don't even need this guy. Yet the Marlins give him away. We'll get his thoughts on that, and then I've got Atlanta Falcon linebacker Deion Jones right after that. Third hour is wide open. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
is the second hour. Welcome back. Live in Southern California, I am Jim Rome. Coming up at 40 past, or in about 15 or 20 minutes from right now, I've got a linebacker with the Atlanta Falcons. But, uncharacteristically, we got to talk some baseball right now. Baseball in December. We're joined by an MLB columnist for Yahoo Sports, also an author of The Arm, an authority on hot dog condiments, and even on the Smackoff itself. He had about as good a debut performance as you could possibly have in the Smackoff. We are joined by Jeff Passan. Hey, Jeff, what's going on? How are you?
Ben Smack, how are you, my friend?
Good, bud, good. How about you? How are things?
Living the dream.
Good. Excellent. I know you are. Take me back to Friday. I'm going to start right there, Jeff. What was your reaction when you heard that Shohei Ohtani had agreed to sign with the LA Angels of all teams?
You know, it's funny. I was just talking about this with somebody in the lobby here at the winter meetings in Orlando. There's still shock throughout the baseball industry that Shohei Ohtani is an Angel. I understand why Anaheim would be an appealing market to him if he wants to DH and if he wants to have the Los Angeles lifestyle potentially without quite the hustle and bustle of actually living in L.A. But at the same time, you look at the teams that he narrowed it down to, and you have the Los Angeles Dodgers, who were one win away from the World Series last year. You have the Chicago Cubs, who won the World Series the year before. You have the Seattle Mariners, who went absolutely all out, and the San Diego Padres, with whom he has a ton of relationships. And the Angels were just the dark horse the entire time. And I still don't quite understand what it was that swung him toward them. You know, he talks about comfort. He talks about things feeling right there. I just don't know where that comfort came from or what those things that make it feel right are. But the fact is, he's an Angel. He's going to play with Mike Trout, and they're a whole lot better now than they were 5 days ago.
Jeff Passan joining us. You know, I see it the same way. When that story broke, Jeff, I'm like, are you kidding me? And here we are after the weekend, and my sense still is, are you kidding me? That's a thing that really happened? But it did. Now, what's your sense as to what he's like as a person and how he approaches the game of baseball?
From everything I've gotten from people who have spoken with him, and I've not personally spoken with him, but from executives, from scouts, from people in Japan who know him, they say he's kind of a farm boy, actually. He grew up in a small town. Up until the point now when he's coming over here, he lived in the Hokkaido Nippon Ham Fighter dorms. Hmm. Like, this is a guy who was one of the most famous people in his country, and he was living in a dorm. He sleeps, eats, and breathes baseball. He wants to become a great baseball player in the major leagues and prove that he's not just a great pitcher but can be a great hitter as well, and that his dedication to his craft is really the thing that guides his life at this point. And look, he's 23 years old, so there's not a whole lot going on right there just in terms of living experience. You can be sheltered and want to succeed at what you do at that age and get away with it. But this is going to be a whole different ball game for him. You know, it's hard to be a major league pitcher every fifth day, as Japanese pitchers who have come here will attest. It's hard to be a major league hitter every day and go up against the great stuff that pitchers are bringing now. To be able to do both while you're adjusting to society in a brand new country in a language you don't understand is an exceedingly difficult thing to do. So I think while the expectations for Shohei Ohtani are going to be off the charts, realizing that there are all these barriers between him and him achieving them is something we should all keep in mind.
Jeff Passan joining us, and maybe that's partly why he decided to do so here with the Angels, and maybe the glare of the spotlight's not quite that sharp, but to your point, it's such an amazing transition to have to make. You know, Jeff, you touched on this, but you talked about Japanese pitchers coming over and having to pitch every fifth day and how challenging that could be. It's one day less than they're accustomed to. We are talking about a fastball that hit 102 or does hit 102 on the gun. He's got a number of off-speed pitches. How good do you think that he can be as a starting pitcher here?
I think he can be a number one starter. And I don't mean a guy who starts on opening day. I mean a legitimate number one starter. And right now there's maybe five of those in baseball. Clayton Kershaw is a number one starter. Corey Kluber, Chris Sale, Max Scherzer. You can probably toss Madison Bumgarner, maybe Justin Verlander at this point in there. But the list's really not a whole lot longer than that. The stuff, though, that Ohtani has is overwhelming. I mean, he's got a fastball that sits 97 to 100 regularly. His splitter is nasty. He's got an array of off-speed pitches that are really good. So if he can keep his control, then we're talking about a guy who's going to be in Cy Young contention every year.
Jeff Passan, my guest. Now, at the same time, Jeff, he can hit as well. Part of the fascination with him is the power that he has at the plate as a hitter. What was he like as a hitter and a fielder in Japan?
Well, he hasn't played in the field since 2014. And even then, I think he played only 8 games in right field. So he does have deceptively excellent speed. And I'm talking like pretty close to Billy Hamilton down the line speed. I mean, this is elite speed. He's down, you know, from the left side, he's down the line at about 3.85 to 3.9 seconds, which anything under 4, you're in the top 2 or 3% in baseball. And so he's got really good speed. I mean, he's a great athlete. And in the power and the swing, you can't question that. But he struck out a lot in Japan. And Japanese baseball isn't like American baseball in that the strikeouts aren't nearly as big of a part of the game there as they are here. So the idea that it's going to translate over here and that what some scouts have said is a pretty long swing is going to bear immediate fruit, I'm not sure about that. He's going to run into some balls. Ball is juice, so it's going to fly once it hits his bat. But, you know, he's going to be one of those guys who has a 2 or 3 home run game, and it won't surprise you, but he'll probably also go through an 0-for-15 streak that makes you wonder why are they even bothering with him hitting. And to be honest with you, I think long-term, he's going to be a pitcher. Mm-hmm. I think the hitting thing's going to happen for a year. They're probably going to give it a second year in earnest, but ultimately he's going to be so good as a pitcher that the risk of putting him out there on even a 2 or 3 times a week basis to go and hit, I'm just not sure it's going to be worth the upside.
We're talking to Jeff Passan. He's covering the Major League Baseball winter meetings. Jeff, before I let you go, how about a quick thought about the big trade between the Marlins and the Yankees? So much for the Yankees' rebuilding process. They add a gigantic bat in Giancarlo Stanton. I'm not even sure they needed that bat, but that's the Yankee way, right? Why do they do it? Because they can. They send Starlin Castro and a pair of minor leaguers to Miami in the trade. Just one thought. What do you make of what Derek Jeter and the Marlins got in exchange for Stanton?
I think pennies on the dollar would be overvaluing it, to be honest.
Right.
They are in pure dump mode at this point. And if you think some of the teardowns in Miami have been bad before, you ain't seen nothing yet. Because, you know, the interesting thing to me, and I'm going to be writing about this today, is that Major League Baseball facilitated the sale of the Marlins franchise to a group of owners that did not have the cash in order to make this a competitive baseball team right now. They have a decent enough core in place with Stanton and Christian Yelich and Marcell Ozuna and JT Realmuto. I mean, those are 4 legitimately good potential all-stars every year. You can build a team around that. But their first move as owners was to ditch the payroll and to bring it down at least $40 million over last year. So, you know, Ozuna's probably going to move this week. Stanton is officially a Yankee. From what I've been told, they're still listening on Yelich. I mean, it's a teardown in the Jeffrey Loria style. And if you thought that ownership of the Marlins was going to improve once Loria sold, which seemed to be an inevitability, well, I'm not saying that Jeets is nearly as bad as Loria, but this has been an ignominious start for them, and it's gotten ugly, and I think it's probably going to get even uglier.
Now, I was going to say, is it possible that they had the worst owner ever and then replaced him with even worse owners? Is that too much?
I would like to believe that Derek Jeter is going to be a better owner than Jeffrey Loria was, but I don't know if you saw this. I wrote a story, I think it was last week, about how the Marlins fired a scout.
Yep.
They didn't renew his contract and let him know while he was in the hospital recovering from colon cancer surgery. And he also needs a kidney transplant, and they just let him go. And so if that's how they're going to treat human beings, I think that it was a despicable thing, frankly, something that I'd like to think no other team, no other business would even conceive of doing. And I'm just hopeful that they learn their lesson from that, that you have to treat people better.
Even Loria, to the best of my knowledge, Jeff, never told a guy to hit the bricks while he was in a hospital awaiting a kidney transplant. But Jeter has.
Yeah, Chuck went up for the record there. It's a bad start for them. And look, transitions from ownership are generally difficult things. But the fact that he didn't reach out to Stanton within the first, 2 months of him owning the team, this guy who's your franchise, this guy you owe $295 million over 10 years, I think that told you where Stanton was going to go, and it was going to be somewhere other than Miami.
He's an MLB columnist for Yahoo Sports. He is the author of The Arm. He is a Smackoff participant and the authority on hot dog condiments. And Cal in Vegas was spared today. Jeff, great job. Great to have you on. Thanks so much.
All right. Take it easy, Jimmy.
Be good, bud. Jeff Passan covering the winter meetings, MLB winter meetings. All right, some baseball for you. When we come back, I want to keep this thing moving. Atlanta Falcons linebacker Deion Jones is going to be my guest. That'll get us near the top of the hour, and then the third hour is wide open. Plenty of time for your telephone calls. If you're on hold, stay there. If not, I've got open phone lines, 1-800-636-8686. The cameras are on. I'm actually looking at them. They're moving around. Studio's pretty awesome. This show, radio show, becomes a TV show on January 2nd. Once again, it's going to be on CBS Sports Network. All 3 hours, live. You can see what the jungle looks like as long as you have CBS Sports Network, so make sure that you do. Bottom of the hour means it's time for a sports update. Here is the latest.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Bottom of hour number two, we are efforting Atlanta Falcons linebacker Deion Jones, who made a huge play at the end of the win this past week. We'll have that for you in a moment. In the meantime, just let me quickly reset part of what we talked about with Jeff Passan. I mean, the deal is not official yet, but the expectation is it'll be Stanton plus $30 million in exchange for second baseman Starlin Castro and a pair of second-tier prospects. So you go back to Friday night. For a moment, the LA Angels had the attention of the baseball world because they just won that bidding for Shohei Ohtani, the best player in Japanese baseball. Notice I didn't say best pitcher or best hitter because essentially he's both those things. A guy with a triple-digit fastball and a slew of off-speed pitches went on the mound, but home run power at the plate and crazy speed on the base pass. As Jeff Passan said, like from plate to first, Billy Hamilton type speed. And the fact that he chose the Angels over everybody else was definitely an upset, something of a shock. And for a moment, the Angels, Anaheim, was the hub of the baseball universe. And then the Yankees took action. And by taking action, I mean they ripped the Miami Marlins for Giancarlo Stanton. They robbed them blind. The Angels get the best player available outside the majors. The Yankees get the best player available inside the majors. And again, what did they have to give up to get this guy? Not a hell of a lot. Starlin Castro and a pair of second-tier prospects. Let me repeat that for you. The National League MVP and $30 million for a second baseman who hit 300 and a couple of second-tier minor leaguers. So that wasn't highway robbery. That was an inside job. Or at least that's the way it felt to every single conspiracy theorist on Twitter. They're thumbtacking baseball cards on a bulletin board and connecting them all with red string. Derek Jeter played for the Yankees. Derek Jeter is now in charge of the Marlins. He just traded his best player and a stack of cash to his old team for spare parts. Either Brian Cashman is a wizard or Derek Jeter is a plant. Or both. Jeter should get another plaque in Monument Park just for this trade. I mean, give it to the guy. It's even more spectacular than the time that he went into the stands for that foul ball, or that time he threw Jeremy Giambi out at home plate. almost as impressive as that double iPad that he's rocking on his desk and that sanitizer station behind it. Look, I'm not going to say the Marlins completely butchered the Stanton situation, but this is pretty much the exact trade that I would expect from a guy with two iPads on his desk. Forget iPads. This is more like the kind of trade that I expect from a guy with two Zunes on his desk. And while the Marlins misplayed this thing, Cashman waited, and he waited, and then he got exactly what he wanted. And if I were a Marlin fan, I'd be pissed. I'd be furious. Of course, I'm not a Marlin fan because nobody is a Marlin fan. So that really doesn't matter, does it? I'll finish that thought in a few moments. In the meantime, if you want to call in either as a Yankee fan or a Marlin fan, if there were one, I would take that. As promised, we're joined right now by a linebacker for the Atlanta Falcons, coming off a huge game in that win over New Orleans. He had 13 tackles and an interception for the season. 109 tackles, one sack, eight passes defensed, and a couple of interceptions. He was an all-rookie team player last season, played his college ball at LSU. The Falcons are 8-5. They're at Tampa on Monday night. Linebacker Deion Jones is my guest. Deion, good to have you back on. How are you?
How you doing?
I'm doing great, Deion. How are things? How you feeling?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good. Hey, look, I'm guessing you've already shifted towards the upcoming game against the Bucs, but I've got to start with Thursday's win over New Orleans, and in particular, that incredible interception that won the game. Can you take me through the play? What did you see from Drew Brees, and what did it feel like when you came down with that ball?
It was just pretty much the call that we was in. I knew I was by myself with the tight end, and when he looked back, I looked back, and the ball was right there. And I really didn't realize I was that high until I saw my feet, and I just knew it was going to be miserable going down.
Right? I was going to say, dude, you were up in the air a long, long time, and then it looked like you hit the ground really hard. What was that landing like for you?
I just wanted to hold on to the ball. You know, I really wanted to seal the deal for my brothers and, you know, really get that turnover. And I just wanted to hold on to it and, you know, seal the deal for us. You know, we had a hard-fought game, and I wanted to turn out the right way.
Deion Jones joining us. You also said after the game, quote, "We always talk about being closers and being the baddest on the field. That's just a product of how hard we work, and I'm proud," end quote. So how would you describe the attitude of this defense and the brotherhood that's back there?
We're all linked in together. We all try to leave it all on the field for each other. And I can say after every game, like, we've always fought all the way to the end. You know, it's never been, you know, anyone, you know, just giving up. And that's how strong we are. We always want to fight to the end for one another.
Talking to Deion Jones, you know, Deion, Matt Ryan's won so many big games for you guys and made so many plays. That was not necessarily his best game. Was there a feeling at all on the defensive side that maybe that was one of those days where you guys need to pick him up and win the game?
It's just a matter of how – that's just how we are. We always have each other's back. Special teams has the offense back just like they have our back, and we have, you know, and vice versa. And we always talk about, you know, passing the baton, and when it's our turn on the field, we just got to, you know, try our best to, you know, do it all we have to do to get the ball back in the offense's hands, because, you know, the more they have the ball, the more they're going to get in rhythm and get things going.
I mentioned in the Open that you were all rookie last season. You had a monster first season, and then you've come back and you've even improved on that. So what was your first season like, and then how much did you change things, or how much did it change things for you in terms of expectations for yourself this season?
This season is just a little bit more – I'm a little bit more comfortable in the scheme. Last year, it was a lot of things going on at one time, and, you know, kind of being thrown in the fire and landing situations on the run. And, I mean, I kind of enjoyed it, you know, because they trusted me, to, you know, to embrace it and take it, you know, and run with it. And I can say as the year's been going, I've just been trying to find, you know, different places I could get better in my game and just working on it.
Falcons linebacker Deion Jones, my guest. You know, the league is so, it's so competitive and it's so bottom line and it can be so cutthroat. Shortly after you were drafted, Paul Werlow, who was the team's middle linebacker, texted you and said, if you need anything at all, just let him know. What did it mean to receive a message like that from him, even though you were there to maybe take his job?
It was crazy. I call him my big bro. He helped me out in ways that, like, he didn't even have to, you know, help me, you know, get the playbook and learn the scheme and stuff like that. And I mean, I always thank them. It was like, You know, he was just like a brother, and just how brotherhood is. Our brotherhood is. We're so close, and he just made sure that I was, you know, that when we competed, it was going to be fair, and you know, like we're going to go at it for the job, and I respected him for that.
Deion, it seems really unusual, right? I mean, is it? And why do you think that he handled it like that?
I mean, that's just I feel like that's just the type of person Wardlow is. He's just a genuine guy, and I mean, like I said, he helped me. He taught me what it was to be a pro. You know, how he approached every week with his preparation and took care of his body, and went to work every week. And he was my example.
We're talking to Deion Jones. In terms of taking care of your body, part of your off-season regimen, I see, was to focus on maybe improving your diet some, and that meant looking at the number of Skittles and gummy bears that you were eating. So I got to know, did you cut them out of the diet altogether, or did you just cut back?
I really just cut back on the candy. I still have a little problem with it, but I cut it out for the most part. I try to do my best to keep it out, but I just can't. I can't.
Deion, listen, man, I understand what you're saying because I still have a little problem with it as well. In fact, some other stuff, too. What is that? Like, we know we shouldn't. We know we don't want to. We know we feel better when we don't. So why do we keep doing it? What is that?
Man, I don't know. It just tastes too good to just cut it out.
It does taste too good.
Just cut it out.
I don't know, man. I'm sure somebody can explain it. One of these people will call up and explain it to me once you're gone. I just know that when that crap hits the bloodstream, man, it feels good. And then it doesn't, but it feels good for a minute or two, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
You know, you recently said also that if you could watch only one movie for the rest of your life, it would be Disney's Hercules. What is it about that flick that you like so much?
Oh, man, that's just one of my childhood movies that I always love. I still watch it to this day. And I'm talking about I used to watch it like 3 or 4 times a day just on repeat. It was pretty bad. I held the TV down for hours just watching it. I still can't. It's just one of my movies that I grew up loving. I had the cake for like 3 years. It was bad.
There's nothing wrong with that. You got nothing to apologize for. We all got a movie like that. I get it. You're also known, and notice I'm kind of taking this off the field a little bit, having some fun. You're also known for walking around barefoot. Like, I'm one of those guys, I got soft feet. I'm not good like that. I don't like doing it. Like, I go out there, and it always ends badly for me. But you go without shoes as often as you can. What's the story behind that?
I just like my feet to be free. I always was like that. I walk outside barefoot sometimes. Not too far, but like some days I get in the car and go to work without shoes on because I know I have shoes at the facility. Like, it's pretty bad. I'm just more comfortable with my shoes off. I walk around the facility with my shoes off.
Why does anybody do anything? Deion, why does anybody do anything? Because they can. So I get it. Listen, how much of what you do on the field as a linebacker is about reacting to what happens in the moment, and then how much of that is the result of the preparation that you've done in the meeting room and in the film room?
I feel like it helps me. Instead of guessing, it's more like the anticipation of, you know, what's about to go on. You know, seeing certain looks and, you know, seeing a certain key that I know for sure that something's about to happen. And it's just a matter of reacting to it and just being on point with it. Instead of just, you know, guessing, you know, second guessing yourself, you also have to, you know it so you can trust it. So it's a lot that goes into it.
You're on point. 109 tackles, 1 sack, 8 passes defensed, and a couple of picks, and a huge one in the win over New Orleans. Atlanta is at Tampa Bay on Monday night. Deion Jones, my guest. Deion, it's been a little while, but it's great to have you back on. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank y'all for having me.
Good job, Deion. That was fun. Well done. Played his college ball at LSU. He was the 56th pick overall in 2016. Had a huge rookie year and playing even bigger this year. Deion Jones, we got hour number 3, which is wide open. So if you try to get through before and you couldn't, call now. If you didn't want to wait before on hold, take your chances now. 1-800-636-8686. You're in the jungle. I'm Jim Rome. This is CBS Sports Radio.